Gain clear, actionable intelligence from CoreLight's network defense experts. CoreLight Defenders translates complex cybersecurity detection challenges into concise, practical episodes designed to support faster, smarter decision-making across modern security teams.
Welcome to CoreLight Defenders. I'm Richard Baitlick, strategist and author in residence at CoreLight. In each episode, we explore insights from the front lines of NDR, network detection and response. And today I am speaking with Vince Stoffer, our field CTO at CoreLight. Welcome, Vince.
Hi, thanks, Richard. Good to be with you.
Everyone, this is the first episode of the CoreLight podcast, and Vince is our first guest. Vince has a long tenure at the company, and it seemed only right to have him be our first guest. And I chose Vince because he has been doing some writing and research and blogging recently on the so-called Typhoon attacks that are coming out. And if you're not familiar with what Typhoon even comes from, that is from the Microsoft nomenclature. They use Typhoon as a convention for China, Blizzard for Russia, Sandstorm for Iran, and so forth. Do we know anything about these threat actors, Vince, perhaps other than that there has been an attribution to China?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly attribution to China. I mean, I think there's some maybe reticence early on, maybe a few years ago, with some of these groups to actually attribute them to China. But I think that pretense is gone. And there's no doubt that these are various actors within, within China, either directly funded by the Chinese Communist Party or working for contractors who were funded by, or perhaps even, you know, directly working for the party themselves. So I don't know that that's always clear, but I think it's definitely clear that there is also overlap amongst the various campaigns that, you know, we've seen and that we might talk about. So I don't know that it's always clear, you know, if this specific threat actor group is working just on, you know, what we might call Volt Typhoon or Salt Typhoon, because there's certainly overlap in some of the TTPs and some of the tools. And so it makes you wonder, you know, are some of these actor groups completely separate or how much do they overlap? But I think it's clear they're all coming out of China.
Yeah. So you mentioned the two key words there. One is Salt and one is Volt. These are the two, I guess, buckets or groupings that Microsoft has come up with for these two groups. And again, we don't exactly know how they map to specific PLA units or Ministry of State Security units. But if you were to sort of try to differentiate between Salt and Volt, how would you describe that?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to say it is, you know, Volt Typhoon has been focused on critical infrastructure. So this is focused on compromising energy, airlines, municipal government facilities that are handling wastewater and things like that. But it can expand also to pretty much anything that you can consider, you know, critical infrastructure, which could include travel and some other things like that, right? Airplanes, etc. And so it what appears to be the goal there, it's still a little unknown what the end goal is. But I think for Volt Typhoon, what we've seen the experts say is that they're really trying to stage and get persistence into some of these environments so that they could potentially disrupt critical infrastructure in the future. On Salt Typhoon, this has really been primarily focused around the telecommunications providers. So we've seen this go after the major telcos, breaching, you know, both customer routers as well as, you know, the telco provided or telco owned routers, and trying to compromise communications, eavesdrop on communications, gather call records, gather information from those telco networks that could, you know, facilitate either intelligence or counterintelligence by the Chinese.
I want to talk about Volt in a second, but I just specifically with Salt, when we talk about getting access to some of these telco capabilities, I've heard that that might be the Kalia system. It's a telco provided and government mandated mechanism to provide wiretapping for digital electronics. Like back in the day, you would walk up to a phone box and gain access with alligator clips and so forth. And to provide a digital equivalent, Kalia was passed as a law. Is that at least part of what's been going on with this group?
Yeah, from what I've read, that could be part of it. I think it's a little unclear because what is clear is that, you know, these groups are going in and compromising these devices in a level that gives them, you know, root level access to these network devices, to these large Cisco routers or whatever, where all the communications are flowing through. So in some cases, I think we've seen the TTPs involve either installing tools onto those routers themselves or just using the built-in tools to capture network connections to actually essentially do PCAP collection. And so whether or not that actually involved something specific to Clea, like using the Clea systems that are already there, or whether they were actually literally just able to go into the routers and start capturing raw network traffic, which could be essentially the equivalent of what Clea was already doing in some other areas. I think that seems to me a bit to be a little bit unclear, but I think the end result is pretty much the same, right? If you're able to gather communications, whether that's actually raw voice traffic that's going over these networks or potentially other metadata around the call records and call logs, end result seems to be the same.
Yeah. Going back to Volt, when I was researching for this podcast, one of the items that struck me about them was that they are known for exploiting 0 days against public-facing infrastructure, which seems like a throwback, right? For years, that was the way you did it. There were just so many 0 days, you could just trip over them and no problem, and everything was connected to the internet. So there you go. And then we sort of got smarter about that. And we took stuff off the internet, and secure coding made life a little bit easier. So you had to switch more towards going after the endpoint and going after endpoint software, PDF readers and Word and that sort of thing. But now we're switched again. And I think for years, people, the security hygiene people were saying, just keep your stuff patched and you'd be fine. But the fact that they're going after publicly facing systems that probably have no choice but to be publicly facing, and they have 0 days. How do you think about that? Like, what do you even think about when you hear that sort of thing? Is there a way to even deal with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it is funny because it's kind of a throwback, yes, to those times when it was much easier to scan for a firewall and compromise that than to go after the endpoints. And maybe part of it is just that the focus in the last few years has really shifted to endpoint protection, to endpoint attacks, to really understanding and seeing that part of our security world. That we've kind of neglected the fact that there are still devices on the network that are not covered by endpoints that are able to be compromised. I think something that's interesting about, several of these Typhoon campaign actors is that it's not always 0 days as well, right? We've seen them use them sparingly and certainly not to the level that some other APT groups have relied upon them. So they're going after, in some cases, routers or network equipment or SOHO devices that are actually, are not 0 days. These are just publicly available vulnerabilities from, in some cases, years ago, right? So in some cases, these things are just woefully out of date, not being monitored or maintained, and it's easy pickings for the attacker to go in and compromise and get access and then jump onto the network and pivot and move laterally and start discovering other systems that they can more easily attack.
Yeah, it seems like there's a almost a mindset that if something is an appliance, you assume that it won't have any problems, as opposed to a desktop or a server, something that you have to administer and patch and there's sort of a rhythm around that, whereas an appliance, you figure, I can't if I can't log into it or I'm not supposed to log into it, who's supposed to be able to get access to it? I remember a long time ago someone saying that they used to run old school like pre OS 10 type Mac software because there was no shell. You had to use a graphical interface in order to interact with this. This was a long time ago, obviously, and I remember thinking that makes no sense at all. If you exploit a piece of software, you could bring your own shell, right? That's what the whole meterpreter is. It's a shell that you bring. So yeah, very interesting. So
Yeah, and it's also possible that, I mean, I'm guessing, but it's certainly in some organizations we work with, right? I think availability is a part of that story, right? Network team maybe owns the routers and the switches. They're not liable to want to just update those and potentially cause an outage or risk downtime or availability loss. So, those aren't maybe in the purview of security as much as, the sort of endpoint and application world is, where they can clearly say, hey, we have compliance requirements, we have whatever. So I think sometimes those network devices or especially those things that have drifted off to the side that are bring your own or SOHO devices or whatever they got attached to the network and maybe someone didn't know, those are a much more easy target because they've just drifted away from that kind of centralized management of security that can happen.
100%, 100%, and I remember working with a customer who had a rock crusher, and it was $1 million an hour to crush rocks, and you did not take the rock crusher offline, even though it was a computer and it was compromised. It's like the intruder had found it. It was running Windows, and they broke into it, and they were using it as a staging point. And we said, look, if you care about the integrity of your environment, you got to take the rock crusher offline and take the loss for that day, I guess. So we talk about network visibility as if it might be the same everywhere, but can you talk to me about maybe different types of network visibility and possibly how it could help with these types of attackers?
Yeah, certainly, one of the most important aspects of network visibility is, where you get that visibility from, right? Is it from, a span port on a switch or a router? Is it from, optical taps that are placed strategically in your network and then gathered together through some sort of tapping infrastructure like a packet broker? Or are you relying on, like some folks, the network visibility that they're getting from their endpoint? Because sure, with an endpoint, solution, you get quite a lot of network visibility. You see everything that those hosts are doing. But I think it's easy to forget that those dark corners of the network are where we're seeing these attacks begin. Again, this is the unmanaged devices, the places that probably have, connectivity to the internet, at least in terms of the initial access, and then are able to reach back into the network either through tunnels or through just their direct connection into the rest of the local network. So I think, we see a maturity scale starting at the border, usually, or at those connection points to the internet, and trying to instrument visibility there with, something like CoreLite, and then that maturity kind of continues along until you need that data further and further inside your network. I think most of the attacks we're talking about today with the Volt and Salt can benefit from that visibility almost anywhere, right? It's just a matter of where you're going to catch the attack. Are you going to catch them earlier on the attack chain in that initial access, or further on as they have already, compromised machines and are kind of moving within your network? So.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible for an end user type organization, so not someone who is a three-letter agency or whatever, could you emulate the sorts of activity that the Typhoons are doing with your own red team, or possibly even hire a third party and then see how your own environment stacks up, like how easy it is for them to get around? Do you notice them, that sort of thing?
I think absolutely. I mean, especially with how much has been published over the last year around the TTPs for many of these campaigns. I mean, we know specifically some of the vulnerabilities they're going after. We know explicitly some of the tools they're using. So absolutely, that's the case. We've done some internal testing for CoreLite, and we're actually soliciting a third-party test to do kind of what you're describing and just highlight some of our detections and our visibility to be able to go after this. But yeah, if I was a big agency or a multinational that had already been targeted by these groups, I would absolutely be trying to train my red team to go after some of these TTPs and explore maybe some of the sub-organizations or acquisitions or whatever that haven't been, perhaps maintained as well as the central organization, and see if, there's further risk there.
Cool. Can you talk a little bit, not in specifics, but just sort of generally how you might have seen our customers use our data with data from another source, like an endpoint or logs or some other, type of visibility?
Yeah, I mean, we have spent quite a lot of energy building out those sorts of integrations. Whether it's endpoint, which we have kind of direct connection to a couple of the most major endpoint providers, or something like vulnerability data or IPAM data or things that are collecting information about, either risks or assets within the organization, and then trying to fuse those together into our data stream. So I think it's pretty important that if we can do that at point of origin, where we are, directing a CoreLite log, we see connections and we see that it's from this host with this user and it perhaps has this sort of vulnerability. Then by the time that gets the downstream SIEM or the data lake or wherever the analysts are using it, they don't have to go back and make a couple more pivots. Of course, much of that information is already available to them, but tying it directly at kind of, time of creation at the network data, I think saves our customers a lot of time, and that's how we often see them using that kind of integration.
Yeah, that's excellent. I really think the only chance you have against groups like this is you need people who know what they're doing. You need them to have the authority to act when they find something suspicious, but then they also need rich data sources that work across a variety of platforms, whether it's coming from the network or the endpoint or other infrastructure, or even from, human third-party sources. Only by having all that work together can you have a chance against these guys.
Yeah, totally agree.
Great. Well, Vince, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for being the first guest on the CoreLite podcast. And I am sure we're going to have you back if you're willing to come back at some point in the future.
Anytime, Richard. So happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for joining us on the Network Defenders podcast, sponsored by CoreLite. We will see you on the network.
You've been listening to CoreLite Defenders. To stay informed with expert intelligence on today's cybersecurity challenges, please subscribe to ensure you never miss an episode. We'll see you on the network.